Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
Up the stairs to her apartment, she is balled up on the couch. Mom and Dad went down to Charlotte. They're not home to find us out.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're broadcasting live from the National Lutherans for Life Conference at the Doubletree Westport in St. Louis. It's Friday afternoon, July the 24th. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address, even though we are out of the studio, we can still take your emails in real time. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Joining us for the next half hour, Dennis DeMauro. We're going to talk about the history of the pro-life movement all the way back to the beginning, but we'll start with the more recent history. He's Secretary of the National Pro-Life Religious Council, President of Northern Virginia Lutherans for Life, and author of the book A Love for Life, Christianity's Consistent Protection of the Unborn. Dennis, welcome back.
Well, thanks so much.
Nice to meet you in person, by the way.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Let's talk about the recent kind of fate, if you will, of the pro-life movement. Will historians look back on this change in administration, this change in leadership in the United States as a major setback for the American pro-life movement?
Well, I think they will not. My opinion is that the public has not really changed its position that drastically on the pro-life issue. That is, I think we're becoming more and more of a pro-life country as we go along. Now, there are setbacks and problems that we have with the Obama administration. For instance, their whole getting rid of the Mexico City policy, promoting abortion overseas, paying organizations that promote and perform abortions overseas. Also other efforts that they're doing to pay for abortions in the District of Columbia, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, it's an endless list of the Obama administration following the pro-life advocates in the United States and promoting the pro-choice position as much as they can. But I don't think that's really changing the way that Americans look at the position.
What was your take on the recent, and it made so much news because it stood as kind of a symbolic event, when the president was invited to speak at the commencement address for Notre Dame, and he went there and he spoke explicitly about abortion, and was probably very warmly received at that commencement at this Catholic university, over against the objections of so much of the magisterium of the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. What was your take on that event?
Well, I think it says that there are a lot of academics in the religious communities, in the Catholic Church and the Lutheran Church, that are favor the Democratic Party. Now, I'm not to say that they're pro-choice. I don't think they are pro-choice, but they're going to look the other way when it comes to promoting their side in the political spectrum. And I think that's what happened at Notre Dame. Left-leaning professors and the president of Notre Dame wanted to have the president there, and they felt it was an honor, and they were willing to look the other way on the abortion question. And a lot of the alumni, of course, thought that that was a problem, and made I think there was an additional graduation by other students that were opposing this position and invitation of Obama, not only just inviting him, but also honoring him at the college. So, it bothered me a lot, because I think that it just shows how low the abortion question is on so many people who are pro-life. They're pro-life, but they're just pro-life in name only. They're not really willing to do much about it. And when given an opportunity to honor a president or someone else who's pro-choice, they'll do so against their own convictions.
What are your thoughts on another thing so much in the news that's impacted the pro-life movement? That is a nomination or nominations in the future for the Supreme Court.
Well, I don't know how Judge Sotomayor is going to turn out. I think in the pro-life community, we're confused. You know, she says that it is stated law, the Roe versus Wade decision, and she's willing to back that up, I guess. She's replacing, I think, Souter, who is much worse than her probably on this question. So I'm not sure it's so wise for us to oppose her that vociferously, considering she might be better than we could have expected.
Okay, let's talk about the pro-life movement before there was Roe.
Mm-hmm.
How would you characterize that in the United States? They didn't call it pro-life. What did they call it when there was this groundswell of concern about abortion, which far predates Roe, obviously, and this concern about how people who were developmentally challenged were treated, the elderly were treated, all of these things. What was it?
Well, I think we had a kind of a tradition, a Christian tradition, which led our country and led our culture in protecting human life. Now, of course, there are many, many situations throughout the history of the United States where it was very possible for you to get an abortion, and almost openly. For instance, in the 19th century, there were advertisements in the New York Times and other places where you could say that you would use the term there was an obstruction or obstruction removal or things like this, which was just a lightly couched, hidden abortion advertisement, which you could see in New York City. And there were many, many opportunities to get abortions. And at that time in the 19th century, when this became aware, people became aware of the abortion problem, which was brought out by a reporter named Augusta St. Clair, who worked for the New York Times, if you can imagine that, and broke this story. But what happened was is that he went through all these different abortion clinics in New York City and made it wrote an article called The Crime of the Century, talking about the abortion problem in New York City. He exposed it, and it really created a groundswell of support for the pro-life cause and changed a lot of laws, made them a lot tougher against abortion in the United States. So this was kind of maybe the first great awakening of the abortion problem in the United States around the 1880s. And I bring that out because it's so much different from the dynamic we see today. You know, only Christian people, when you go to a pro-life movement or pro-life conference, you say, what church do you go to? Because you know everyone's going to church. There's no one who's not a Christian who's in that National Right to Life or a Lutherans for Life convention like we're at now. There's no chance you're going to meet someone who is not of faith. But in those days, it was actually the pro-life movement was run by the American Medical Association other organizations that were, pretty secular. And so we could sit back as Christians back in those days and have other people fight our battles for us.
What happened? I mean, what happened where you could have had these secular organizations, medical and otherwise, spearheading regulation of and legal curtailing of abortion? And that sounds like a paradise compared to what we have now. I mean, that's a forgotten dream.
Yeah.
How did it change?
Well, it changed because I think our society became more and more secularized. So organizations like the AMA didn't have a majority of Christians after a while, or Christians that would act on their convictions. You didn't have organizations. Even, the YMCA was a very huge organization that was very pro-life, active against the anti-vice movement in the late 19th century. What is the YMCA today? It's pretty much just a club where you go and take a swim or go to a weight room. It's not a Christian organization that is devoted to morality or changing society at all.
Okay, Dennis, let's talk kind of a longer perspective on this. We hear encyclicals from a recent encyclical, even on the economy, from Pope Benedict XVI, and he is at pains to mention the need for a high regard in the secular world for intrinsic value of life. But this is kind of the tip of the iceberg of a very, very long legacy of this kind of pronouncement, this kind of concern on the part of the church. Going back to the time of the apostles or thereabouts, do we find these issues in the mind of the church, these issues about protecting life from beginning to end?
We do. I bring out in the book that the Jewish people and the Christians that followed them really looked at human life differently from the pagans that were around surrounding them in society. They wouldn't expose their children, which was very common. You'd leave a child out to die if you'd already finished your will and you had additional children. You'd just kill them. And you would also have abortions through these sorcerers and witchcraft, where people would go to a sorcerer or a witch and they would buy these abortive drafts, like were drinks, and a woman would drink it, causing a miscarriage. And obviously it was very dangerous. And you can kind of think of it almost like chemo today. The idea is hopefully it'll kill the cancer, won't kill you.
The woman would essentially poison herself in order to induce a miscarriage.
That's right. That's right. So the church was very, very aware of all of this going on, of course, and in their prohibitions on witchcraft, they included prohibitions specifically on abortion. This happened, for instance, in the Didache, which is a first century document of the apostles, specifically, along with a litany of other sins to avoid, talks specifically about abortion and prohibits it. This is in the first century.
Where's the next major step for the church in its kind of ability to articulate its position on life? Where would you place that in history?
Our next saying, what should we do next?
Well, as history progressed from the time of the apostles, where do we see again the church formally addressing the issue of life, its dignity, its value?
Well, I think the church needs to really kind of take stock in the history of Christianity and really press the issue, not just talking about it like the professors do at Notre Dame and not just giving a lip service, but actually making a statement saying, this is where I stand, this is where the church stands, this is a doctrine that's very, very important, and this is something that we're going to really make a case for in society. It's going to separate us, just like it did from those pagans in the first century church. It's going to separate us from the rest of society. It's going to say, these people are different. These people are people of God, and these people are going to follow God's tenets.
When we come back from this break, we're going to have 10 more minutes with Dennis DeMauro. He's Secretary of the National Pro-Life Religious Council, President of Northern Virginia Lutherans for Life, and author of the book A Love for Life, Christianity's Consistent Protection of the Unborn. We're broadcasting live from the National Lutherans for Life Conference at the DoubleTree Westport in St. Louis. It's Friday afternoon, July the 24th. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. After those 10 minutes and in the second hour of the program, we'll devote the entire second hour of Friday's program this afternoon to a conversation with Bobby Schindler. We'll talk about the legacy of Terry Schindler Schiavo. Bobby is executive director of the Terry Schindler Schiavo Foundation, co-author of the book A Life That Matters, The Legacy of Terry Schiavo, A Lesson for Us All. When we come back, 10 more minutes with Dennis DeMauro on the history of the pro-life movement. Stay tuned.
I know your brothers and your sister and your mother too. Man, I wish you could see them too.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Village Lutheran Church in Ladue thanks God for His saving gift of faith through Christ and invites you to share in this gift by worshiping with us Sunday mornings at 8:15 or 10:45. We're conveniently located 1 mile west of the Galleria on Clayton Road. For more information, call 314-993-1834 or visit villagelutheranchurch.org. Village Lutheran Church, ordinary people loved by an extraordinary God. VillageLutheranChurch.org.
Here's a new way to stay connected to Issues Etc. Check out our page on Facebook. Network with fellow Issues Etc. junkies. Sign up to become a fan, and we'll send you updates on future topics and guests. You'll even find photos of in-studio guests, Todd drinking chelada, and highlights from our one-year anniversary open house. You'll discover that Todd, Jeff, and Craig really do have faces for radio on Facebook. Issues Etc. on Facebook. Another way to stay connected to Issues Etc. www.facebook.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. 10 more minutes with Dennis DeMauro on the history of the pro-life movement. 1-877-623-6943. MyIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. We're broadcasting live remotely from the National Lutherans for Life Conference at the DoubleTree Westport in St. Louis on this Friday afternoon, July the 24th. Let's talk about the time of the Reformation. There were a lot of very heavy theological subjects being taken up at the time, and of course, the conversation of the church dealt largely with matters that we would think, quote-unquote, theological. But I imagine that these reformers did have something to say about issues of life and the protection of life. How would you summarize it?
Well, they sure did. I mean, it's one of the things that they really didn't debate a whole hot lot in the at the time in the Reformation, because everyone was totally agreed that abortion was a sinful act. I have a couple quotes here if I could bring them out. One of the, of course, great reformers was Martin Luther, and he wrote this about abortion. He said, "He, God, is not hostile to children as we are, but God emphasizes his word to such an extent that he sometimes gives offspring even to those who do not desire it, yes, even hate it. How great, therefore, the wickedness of human nature is. How many girls there are who prevent conception and kill and expel tender fetuses, although procreation is the work of God." So this is pretty consistent, and we can also see it in other reformers as well that I have in the book, John Wesley, John Calvin. It was a area of no dispute, unlike today in Christianity. Everyone was pro-life. It was simply seen as a blessing from God.
Kathy is listening in St. Charles, Missouri. Kathy, thank you for waiting on the line, and welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yes, thank you. I'm enjoying the program. My question would be regarding the disabled and the church's response recently compared to the church's response in the past, recently more in history. The disabled, how they benefit not just the families that they're in, but the Christian community and the community at large. If we care for the least of these, I always think of, you care for me. Whatever you do for the least of these, you do for me. And it just seems like so often the disabled are, even in the life issues, are often the last to be thought of. It's assumed that the state is taking care of them and taking care of their families, and so often the Christian church is just doing very little or nothing to help the individuals that are dealing with this day in and day out.
Kathy, thank you very much. Let's deal with the first issue that she raises, and that is the legacy or the history of the Christian Church's view toward what we today call the disabled. Always with us, all these conditions are common in human history. Have there been improvements in that regard over the time of Christian history?
Well, I would say that the way that we treat the disabled has long been a characterization, it's characterized Christianity, that we, unlike the pagan people, for instance, in the first century church, did not decide that we're going to simply leave or expose a disabled person simply because they couldn't keep up with the tribe or for whatever reason, for convenience. We've seen that person as a precious gift from God. And I think that today, if anything, we have a lesser view of the sanctity of human life for the disabled. One of the big problems and what comes out in conferences many times is pregnant women who receive all kinds of diagnostics, whether it be blood tests or other tests, to determine if the child that they're carrying has Down syndrome or some other spina bifida or some other disability that would cause problems later. Now, if this were done only to be able to operate on those children or improve their health, it would be one thing, but we find that almost always it's a way to determine whether a woman should have an abortion. And so, for instance, my wife and her friends, she tells a number of friends, don't take some of these blood tests because all they're used for is to determine whether or not you should have an abortion or not. And if you're not going to have an abortion, then there's no use for this. So I think that there's a lot of ways that we as Christians are making these decisions to have abortions based on the health of the child, when this would kind of be unthinkable to the first century church. Every child, even a disabled child, is precious to God.
Kathy also talks about the the benefit that the Christian community, the Christian family receives, even while they are caring for someone who may be profoundly disabled. Talk about that if you would.
Well, we have a great film here at Lutherans for Life that talks about a mother who had a child with Down syndrome, how, in a similar way that I was describing before, went to the doctor, and the doctor said, you know, this is a child that should be terminated because we know from a test this child has the chromosomes that characterize a Down syndrome child. And she decided to, instead of listening to this doctor, go to her pastor, talk to him, and she says it was the best thing she ever did, that this child, a Down syndrome child, has done nothing but given them so much joy and happiness in their life. Yes, I think that we as Christians need to remember the great gift these children are, and how when we can think about it in a situation when we're confronted with it early in the pregnancy, but ask any person that has a 10-year-old Down syndrome child whether or not that they should have had an abortion, I'll tell you what, they're all going to say, no, absolutely not. This child has been such a blessing to me. If we only knew what a blessing these children were in the long run, I think this question wouldn't be asked.
One of the saddest things today is that, as you said before in the early in our conversation, it was considered just kind of run-of-the-mill that if you're a Christian, you're going to be pro-life, whatever issues confronted you in the past, and that there was even this Christian ethos that permeated our society that made things like abortion on demand unthinkable. Mm-hmm. And all of that changed. Along with it, the sometimes official and unofficial stances of even Protestant church bodies in the United States, where they have no position or they actually have a pro-choice position, mm-hmm. whether in their either written or unwritten. How would you evaluate that situation in the United States where there are major Protestant denominations that say, if you want to have an abortion, we're pro-choice?
Well, I think it's a misplaced compassion on their side in these denominations. They think they're doing a good thing. I really do. They think they're doing a benefit to a woman who finds herself in a problem pregnancy or in an unexpected pregnancy, and they say, well, let's just be kind to her and simply allow her to have an abortion. But what they don't realize is that they're creating all kinds of problems for that woman. First of all, their child is being killed. Second of all, this woman is going to be filled with the guilt and fear that we see in so many women who have had abortions, that instead of thinking, oh, well, we're just going to quickly and quietly solve this problem and everything is going away, we create an even bigger problem. So this compassion that they think they're providing is really having the opposite effect. And it's really destructive.
If someone says, you know, and we've heard this from politicians, especially Roman Catholic politicians, with only a minute here, Dennis, well, you know, the church has never really taken a firm, hard stand on the issue of protecting life or the intrinsic dignity or value of human life. How do you respond to that with 1 minute?
1 minute, just read my book, A Love for Life. And if you can actually read through that book and not see a history of consistent pro-life witness throughout the Christian church, the fact that anyone, Nancy Pelosi or the vice president, could say such things that, you know, we don't really, the Catholic Church hasn't taken this position, it's in canon law after canon law, in penance guide after penance guide in the Catholic Church. There's nothing that could be more clear than that.
Dennis DeMauro is Secretary of the National Pro-Life Religious Council, President of the Northern Virginia Lutherans for Life, and author of the book A Love for Life, Christianity's Consistent Protection of the Unborn. You can purchase A Love for Life under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Dennis, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks so much.
When we come back from this break, we're going to spend the second hour of our live broadcast from the National Lutherans for Life Conference at the Doubletree Westport in St. Louis with Bobby Schindler, the brother of Terry Schindler Schiavo. We're going to talk about the legacy of that young woman. It's Friday afternoon, July the 24th. I'm Todd Wilkin. You can join us for the next hour. Our call-in number, even though we're remote, we can still take your phone calls, 1-877-623-6943, or talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org or 1-877-623-MYIE. There's nothing inconsistent about the church's continued protection of life. Now, the issues have broadened. The technology has certainly made taking a stand in favor of life at all stages of development, it has certainly made our stance more difficult to take. Of course, no one ever promised us that serving our neighbor in this way would be easy. In fact, what we're discovering, 30 years of legalized abortion and all of the history before that, is that protecting our neighbor, and that's what this really is. When we talk about life, we're talking about our neighbor's life, their well-being, whether that neighbor is in the womb or at the end of their life lying in a bed. Protecting your neighbor is hard to do. It's a calling that each of us has as a Christian. Their well-being, their life, their health, their survival. It's a difficult thing to do. It requires a lot of action and constant vigilance. But it is simply what we are called to do. Our Savior Jesus defines the neighbor for us. He says the neighbor is defined from the bottom up, from the ground up. Those that are least able to help us, do anything for us, and are most in need of our protection and our care. When we come back, we'll talk about Terry Schindler-Scheibel, her life with Bobby Schindler. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.